Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my home out there on the edge of the prairie. We've had this very warm September, and the trees have not started to turn as yet, but the apples are ripe, and there's a smell of them in the air, the smell of apples and the smell of smoke and leather and horses. And you sit outside under a tree, and you sit on wet leaves, and if you have a cup of coffee in your hand and you have a dog sitting there by you, which in Lake Wobegon you would be likely to have, it brings back all sorts of memories. Smell, you know, is the key to memory, and these smells bring back these stories, a dog and a coffee and September bring back to me the memory of when I would hitchhike when I was 14 years old. Before I could drive, I hitchhiked all the way from Lake Wobegon down to downtown Minneapolis to go to the big library down there. You'd stand out by the highway and you put out your thumb. Nobody does this anymore, but we did it back then. We had no idea what we were doing, and big Cadillac pulls up and alongside you, and the door opens, and you have this moment now to decide, do I get in? Do I say, no, thank you? What do I do? There's a dog in the back seat. There's a rifle in the back seat. There's a man sitting at the wheel, and I got in. I got in. I could smell the coffee. The dog was a big golden retriever sitting in the back seat. I sat in the passenger seat, and he pulled away. He was wearing a black suit and a white shirt that was buttoned up to the collar, and he was wearing no tie. His black hair was slicked back. We drove away. How far are you going? I said, New Orleans. He said, well, I said, I'm just going to Minneapolis. That's fine. That's fine, he said. We drove along for a while. The dog was sitting right behind me. His muzzle was right. I could feel his nose against my neck. He wasn't growling, but he was paying attention very closely. We were driving along. I said, what kind of a rifle is that? I said, he said, that's a kind of a gun that will take care of any kind of situation that you may find yourself in. I didn't used to carry one, but nowadays, this country going the way it is, it's necessary for a man to carry them. This is not the country that it used to be, and I'll tell you who's responsible. Harry Truman. Harry Truman. He's the one who opened the door to all these people that came in. I tell you, a white man doesn't stand a chance in America anymore. No, sir. No, I run into all kinds of situations I never expected to run into. He reached up into his shirt pocket and he offered me a cigarette. I took one just out of politeness. I'd never had one before in my life. I put it in my pocket. I smelled it. It was very rich and very foreign. We drove along. He told me all sorts of things I'd never heard before, all sorts of words for different kinds of people. And when he finally stopped in downtown Minneapolis, I was awfully grateful. I opened up the door. I said, thank you very much. He said, you take care. You remember what I told you now. This is a dangerous country. You look out for yourself. You remember these things, the smell of fall and a dog and coffee, and it just all of it comes back to you. It's that time of year when you see men out working on their houses. They're painting the trim up under the gutters. They're working in their garages, and you know that in the course of the week, some woman has spoken to them in a certain tone of voice, and this lit a fire under them, and they went to work. Because men are not naturally workers. Men are migrants. Men are philosophers. They're poets. They're storytellers. They're drifters. That's who we are. And if the furnace should go out, our natural first reaction is to pack a duffel bag and go look for a house where the furnace is working and form a friendship with whatever woman lives there. Or lacking that, to get on a train and go down south where you don't need one. No, a woman will speak to you in a certain tone of voice, and she will hit a note which activates your husband hormone, and you and you get busy. And she says, I have asked you 3 times to clean the garage, and now this is the 4th time. And the sound of that 4th, you move towards the garage and you get your toolbox out, though you have no idea what to do with it, and and the garage door is off its track, and you try to man that into position, but you remember when you were a kid and you used to put on plays in your dad's garage and you dragooned neighborhood children in to take part in this. And the Three Musketeers, and the girls were not that familiar with the story of Athos, Porthos, and Aramis and their friend D'Artagnan. And so you had to teach them how to say, Mon Dieu! Sacrebleu! You had to teach them and how to fight with swords, and you used your dad's drop cloth for a curtain. All of this comes back to you, and then your wife speaks to you again and says, what are you doing? You're remembering, that's all. You know, if you don't paint the trim, that's going to rot, and then it's going to be really expensive. So you get up on a ladder and you paint, and bees are attracted to the paint, and you sort of swat them away, but you swat some paint onto a bee and it's on his wings, and now he can't fly and he's crawling around helplessly, and you swap him with the paintbrush and you kill him, and now he's part of the house. He's a permanent part of the house. You're up there on a high ladder. Every man up on a ladder is a philosopher, and you're thinking about mutability and about the brevity of life, and you're thinking about reincarnation and so on. And it's not getting done, is it? No. But it's still warm. It's still a warm month of September. No. In Lake Wobegon, you're expected to do these things yourself, you see. If you lived in New York, you could call a super. If you had a window you needed to have glazed, you could call the super and he'd come up and do it and put the putty on. Or you could Google glaze, and you'd go buy 100 websites about donuts and ceramics, and you'd come up with this guy with an interesting sort of African name, and he would come out and do it for you, and he's a very nice man. He was a poet in West Africa and a teacher, but now he's glazing windows, and he does a beautiful job, and he's a very sweet man. But we don't have that in Lake Wobegon, you see. There's nobody there from West Africa who needs to do that work, and so you have to do it yourself. And if you have Pete down at the hardware store, do the putty for you. People ask all sorts of questions about you. They just have all sorts of doubts about you. If you're maybe running a secret gambling ring upstairs bedroom at night, if you're smuggling drugs in from Canada, or what you're doing, you're supposed to do this yourself. It's part of the deal if you live in Lake Wobegon. Well, church attendance is picking up because it's getting to that time of year. It was Rally Sunday a couple weeks ago at the Lutheran Church, and more people are coming, and they're gradually getting used to the new pastor, Pastor Carl Kohler, although he's an odd person, very twitchy around people and makes no eye contact, and he's very uneasy, which is not a good thing in somebody whose job is to be around people, and he's very uncomfortable up in the pulpit, but it's the gospel. He preaches, you know, the gospel. He preached from the gospel according to St. Mark and the verse where Jesus said that he who would be first must be last and be a servant to all of the others, which is a basic Lutheran text and a basic Lutheran view of the world. He's an odd man, Pastor Kohler, but we've had odd people there before, and we just listen to what they have to say and take the rest with a grain of salt. He's having a big thing at church on Sunday night to look at this eclipse of the moon. What this has to do with the gospel, I have no idea, but he's invited everybody to come to the church, and they'll be out on the lawn, and there'll be a wiener roast, and everybody's getting there around 7 o'clock to watch the moon turn red, this bright, bright moon, as close to the earth as ever it will be in the course of a year, and to see this eclipse. People are going to come and watch this, including people in the Lutheran Church who are end times people and who believe that this eclipse is an omen of the beginning of the end of the world and that the second coming might come right on the heels of it, and then the apocalypse and violence and chaos sweep the world. And many of these people are driving around with guns in their cars to protect themselves in the case of chaos and the end of the world. They're Lutherans. They're strange Lutherans. We're not aware of how many there are because nobody hitchhikes anymore, you see. We only meet people who are like ourselves. We don't go out there on the highway of life and see who's looking for passengers. One of the Norwegian bachelor farmers went berserk with a rifle here the other night, Tuesday night, and he was firing Mr. Hoppy. He went crazy out there, and it was late at night. He was blasting away from his back porch, and Gary and Leroy, the constables, were called, although it's really the sheriff's case, but he didn't want to go out and deal with this old man who was yelling gibberish, and somehow he thought this warm September was caused by Mexicans, and so he was yelling about Mexicans, and Gary and Leroy had to creep up alongside the house. They came in from the front, and he was there on the porch in the back, and they yelled to him. They said, "Hoppy." He said, "Who is it?" He said, "Gary. Gary and Leroy, we're here. We got a joke for you." "Not in the mood for jokes." "Well, this is a good one." Mr. Hoppy said, "What is it?" Well, there they had him, you see. He may be crazy, but he still wants to hear a joke. They said, "So there was this nun, and she liked to exercise in her bedroom in the nude. And there was a knock on the door, and the man said, 'Blind man.' And she said, 'Well, come in.' And he walked in, and he said, 'Hi, sister. Hey, you look good. Where do you want me to put the blinds?'" They told him a few more. They weren't sure he got the jokes, but even when you're crazy, you can hear the cadence, the rhythm of a joke, and you can hear where the punchline is. And so even though he may not have gotten the joke, he still laughed where he was supposed to laugh, you see. This is ingrained in us, this love of jokes. So there was this woman who was doing the laundry in the basement, and she thought as long as she was doing the laundry, she might as well wash the clothes that she was wearing. So she took them all off, and she put them in the washing machine. And then she went to the dryer, and the water pipe was leaking, and so she put her son's football helmet on, and there she was, and the meter man walked in, and he said, "Ma'am," he said, "whatever team you're on, I hope it's the winning one." They got him into the car. They wrapped a blanket around him. They got the rifle out of his hands, all on the basis of just telling him some jokes. Leroy said, "Now, you just take it easy now. I'm going to put this bracelet on your wrist. Is that too tight?" "No? Okay, good. And you just quiet down now. And on the way in, I'll tell you the one about Oli and Lena. Okay? All right. You okay? Good." Well, that's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.